Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, the island chained nation paradise in the sunny slave South Pacific, with all the Fukushima radiation so that when you go out sunbathing you can still soak up the rays. And my very special guest today is Mark Sellett. Is that how you pronounce it, Mark?
It would be Mark Sellett, similar to
To a high school teacher.
I guess so.
Especially after testing season and pop quizzes, because they marks a lot. All right, so would you be able to explain to me just a little bit about who you are and what it is you do?
Well, I'm actually an amateur researcher with a knack for connecting dots, so to speak. I'm a tattoo artist. I work out of Chronic Tattoo in San Diego, California. And in my spare time, I like to research, matters that are of a deeper interest to humanity. That's basically it.
Care to elaborate? What started you off on this wee little journey?
I got curious about astrology and numerology and decided to try it out on myself and do my own readings, you know, after trying, you know, some online sources and, you know, discovered a little bit more about myself. And decided that I'd start looking into other avenues of this. And something led me to Freemasonry, because I think it was the whole conspiracy theory thing. And that led to research into UFOs. I know that's kind of a wide jump there, but I ran across an article dealing with this Nazi UFO subject. And they spoke of a specific star. And that got me to thinking, you know, what the hell is this star and what's so special about it? Well, I come to find out that it is in the constellation Taurus. And that it was represented by the bull, you know, big deal. But I started looking around into other ancient religion and started noticing the symbol showing up quite a bit and decided to look into that.
And what did you find?
Well, what I found is that it's a very prominent symbol in nearly every religion on the planet, at least in the northern hemisphere, so far as I can tell. And it spans a pretty large length of time, you know, going back well outside the realm of what astrologers would call the Age of Taurus. I mean, this goes back into cave paintings that are at least 20,000 years old. We have similar symbolism found at the site of Göbekli Tepe, Turkey, which seems to depict the same thing on one of these pillars that they have there as what's found in ancient Egyptian and iconography.
Go on.
Namely the depiction of the goddess Hathor. And I always wondered, okay, why are they depicting this solar disk in red, you know? Well, come to find out by doing a little bit more research on that maybe it's not the sun, which in other artwork, I guess you could say it is depicted in yellow. The moon is depicted as a moon would be depicted, but I got curious as to why it's in the center of the horns, why something that's like the site of Göbekli Tepe would have the same type of imagery. And that got me to doing research on the star and research into linguistics and etymology. And so I decided to go and find out what the etymology on the source was. We'll just say God. And what I found out was that the word God in all capital form comes from a Proto-Germanic root. And the Proto-Germanic root word was Gudan. Well, I didn't really pay too much mind to that at first, but I ran across the name of the particular star in a Babylonian star catalog, and the name of that is Mul Gudan Na. So I got to thinking, I wonder if that has anything to do with this Proto-Germanic root of Gudan, because basically you simply take off Mul and An off the word and you're left with Gudan. And if that's really the root of the word, then it does come from Sumeria.
In Sumeria, of course, being a very ancient, quite sophisticated culture that, according to some archaeologists that I've spoken to, miraculously, like out of nowhere, just somehow instantaneously developed high levels of mathematics, engineering, architecture, civics, a justice system, and all of these other things. It's like, yeah, we're scratching around in the rocks in the desert, and all of a sudden we're a sophisticated society. I wonder how that happened.
Poof, we're here. But they seem to explain it in some of their creation myths, which seems to tie into biblical creation myths, such as, the creation of humans as applied or taken from the Marduk legend, where it says that he had sacrificed a god known as Kingu, which might be where the word kin comes from, but that's another story. And he mixed Kingu's blood with clay, which would, wouldn't that make the clay red? Anyway, then you examine the word Adam and Edom in the Hebrew language, and you find out that Adam and Edom both mean red, or red all over. So if Adam was created from clay and his name means red, it would stand to reason that it more than likely follows the ancient Sumerian accounts.
Well, what exactly is the ancient Sumerian kind of like, oh, well, this is the way everything was created? Did they explain how their civilization was created and the sophisticated nature of it, or no?
As far as I can ascertain, that the information was handed down by what is known as the Anunnaki.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the visitors from another world.
Right. You know, and that seems to be the consensus when you butt that up against the Hebrew Bible, you know, as far as the Elohim, the plural Elohim, saying, let us create man in our image, in our likeness. Who's our? That implies more than one.
So
that monotheistic religion is implying there's more than one God? That must mean that it might not be the original religion. It might be an attempt at uniting what was believed at that particular moment in time. So basically, compiling the stories from contemporary civilizations into one book and stating that as religious law.
So it's not the God, it's the gods, plural.
Pretty much, you know, but one thing it seems or appears that they're trying to do is to obfuscate themselves into being perceived as the God, the prime creator. But it seems like they slip up a couple spots and let us know that this is a plural group of entities we're talking about.
What do you reckon, the gods are still around today?
That's tough to say. We're in quite a predicament now, aren't we? I'm not convinced that they left, but I'm not entirely convinced that they're in the same form, I guess, that they were in those days.
What, so your reptilian shapeshifters or David Icke talks about?
Not quite. I'm not really big on that side of it. More or less genetically bred themselves into the society, and you wouldn't know if you were talking to one or not.
I think I was interviewing somebody, might have been yesterday or the day before or something like that, and they were telling me that this elite kind of Anunnaki bloodline has been diluted yet kept throughout thousands of years, and it's gotten to the point where they actually do have different DNA to us. They look just like we do, but their DNA is very, very different, and they are capable, I think, over that time of getting rid of parts of the genetic code of humans, like empathy, love, compassion, those kind of good things that we really define as being some of the greatest parts of the human character, creativity, you know.
Right, I agree.
And they've allegedly had to keep this all secret because they can't go to public hospitals or anything like that, because they'll pull a tube of blood and just go, "What the f-?" You know.
Right.
It'll be like an alien or something like that. It's like, why are my hypodermic needles melting?
Right.
I don't know. I'm just making that up. But, but you know, if there was, and I entertain the thought that, let's say, you know, just for the sake of argument, there's a bunch of ruthless criminal alien scumbags that are actually ruling the planet in human form and what have you. One has to wonder now, what if that thought process isn't true? What if they're actually just human, just like you and me, and by saying that they're not, we're promoting some kind of dehumanization agenda, the same thing these scumbags have been doing to humanity for the rest of the history?
Right. I agree with that. I agree that any future action that may take place should be based on action and intent rather than any type of racial connotation.
Mm. Occupy managed to combine action and being intense at the same time.
Well, basically by kind of keeping an eye on how things are manifesting, you know, the actions our politicians may be taking over here in the U.S. We're supposedly being forced to buy a healthcare program that nobody really wants.
I saw a great post on Facebook today. It's a stormtrooper with his head in his hands, just saying, "I really don't like Darth Vader, but if I criticize him, all the other stormtroopers will attack me and call me racist because Darth Vader's black."
Right. Yeah, that race card. See, that's the intent I'm talking about. You know, this seems, it has the appearance of being planned and implemented over large increments of time. And it's getting to the point where it's reached a fever pitch, and you know, it seems like it's either now or never to these guys. And you know, the more you look around, the more our liberties are being stripped away, the more the Constitution, at least here in the United States, isn't being paid attention to. It's just another piece of paper to these guys.
Well, I've got this. I don't know what is going on specifically, and that's because I'm a generalist. You know, I don't go into the nitty gritty details. What is or isn't actually 100% going on? Just kind of try to listen to some of the people that do, and I might forget like half of it or something like that. But I got this feeling that I'm actually on the right path, and I am slowly figuring stuff out because I'm not arrogant enough to think that I've got it all figured out already. Do you share that intention?
Yes, pretty much so. I explore a lot of this occult side of things, and I notice there's a lot of good intentions. People really mean well, but they're full of malarkey, as far as I can tell. I don't claim to have it all figured out, but what I seem to have run across is backed by scientific evidence and kind of refutes some of these claims that have been made for quite some time now, at least a couple hundred years.
Have you noticed that science has kind of been corrupted? You know, it used to be, I think the creators of science, a lot of the principles, were in fact deeply religious men. And all of them believed, I think, that science was about measuring and having tools to measure the physical world, you know, the things that were in this particular 3D realm, and they stipulated, or at least I believe they do, if I remember correctly, that it was never the intention of developing the scientific methodology to eliminate God.
Right.
But that's what's happened, isn't it?
Exactly. And, you know, so that's why I took the path of, okay, let's look into what some of these religious beliefs are. And I'm doing it from a very generalist approach myself. So the synopses pretty much give the gist of what the literature actually contains. So without, you know, spending hours and hours in this actual literature, I'm, you know, kind of taking other people's word for it that may have a greater knowledge, people that have actually stuck their nose in the book and read every single word. But, and some of that has led me to not necessarily the conclusion, but to the opinion that some of what's being said is true and some of what's being said is false.
How do you find out what the difference is between a falsehood and a truth? I was talking before about Jan Irvin teaching people the trivium, you know, putting your grammar before your logic. You've got to ask those questions, the who, what, when, where, why, and how, before you start wondering about intention. And I was kind of looking about conspiracy in and of itself. Okay, so let's say a government department comes up and they say, we're going to do this, this, and blah, 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 and it's going to be really good for the community and the working poor and so on and so forth. And then it turns out that all they're doing is basically destroying the working poor and attacking people's freedoms and sovereignty and taking away their freedom of speech and detained without warrants and what have you. So what they say their intention is to help people, but what the effect of what they're doing is hurting people. I think that actually explains what the real intent is. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. That's why, you know, watch what they're doing. listen to what they're saying, and then watch what they do, basically.
Yeah.
You know, and you will find out for yourself. You know, some of getting back to how I ascertain the truth, some of it resonates with me and some of it doesn't. It's that simple.
I'm wondering what's the determining factor between something you're willing to believe and something you're no longer willing to believe, you know? And would that change over time? I'm thinking that it really does. Don't you think?
Yes, I 100% with you on that one. For the longest time with this whole UFO thing, I was like, oh, cool, little gray aliens come here every once in a while and they check us out. But the more I looked into it, I'm like, well, maybe it's not these little gray aliens and maybe it's not alien technology at all. And recently I've been listening to a lot of Joseph P. Farrell's interviews. I've read one of his books, The Philosopher's Stone. Very good. A lot of very informative material in there. And he gets really, really into the details of moving the money around, the technology and the physics involved with the technology. And I'm kind of siding with him on the whole extraterrestrial origin of these UFOs that have been sighted all over the world. The non-extraterrestrial, I should say. but I can't rule out that possibility. So until, you know, I guess personally experience it, it's going to be hard to sway my my opinion on that matter.
Well, how strongly do you hold your opinions? Because my opinions can be changed on a dime. You know, it's like, I believe this. And it's like, but Vinny, there's this evidence here. Really? Oh, okay, I don't believe that anymore.
Well, right. I mean, that's why I've continued to dig into this particular theory that I have. And the more I dig into it, the more I seem to find things that corroborate what I quote unquote believe.
Sorry, I don't quite follow.
Well, for instance, let's take this Pleiadian hypothesis. I decided to look into that, and the propagator of this was a guy named Billy Meyer out of Switzerland, and apparently he claims to have had contact with these Pleiadian people. I've looked at some of the photographs he's published since he's said this, and come to the conclusion that they were phonies. And some of the stuff that he talks about, some of the names that he uses, and some of his background being involved in the reading of some of these ancient texts, and then the names he chose to use to publish as what these Pleiaren, that he calls them, told them their names were. For instance, one of them was called Ptah, which is actually an ancient Egyptian god that's represented by a bull. Well, we have Ptah and we have the constellation Taurus there. It's a bull, but did you hear about that from the Pleiaren, or did you hear about that while you were studying ancient religions?
Or did you hear about it while you were really baked in an underground club at some point?
Either way. And then he claims that they live on a planet called Era, E-R-R-A, and that that planet orbits a star called Teget. Well, it just so happens that there is a star that science has deemed too young to really be habitable because it's a B-type star that has a big circumstellar dust cloud around it. And they've detected planets out to, I think it was like 1,500 light years away. So the Pleiades only being 500 light years away, I'm sure if there's planets around it, they more than likely would have detected them. So it just seems like, yeah, either he was baked in a club and making this all up and I'm going to make some money off of this. And but the incredible amount of people that seem to follow this just baffles me. I'm like, are you serious? And then they're serious.
I got a joke about that. What did the three wise men say when a star started talking to them and told them that the son of God was just born? Bro, bro, are you serious?
That brings up another interesting thing. I noticed that most of the information, especially in the 1800s about Sirius, came from fellows of the Royal Society. And the Royal Society, I believe, was known as the Invisible College before it became the Royal Society. And they were followers of, what is his name? Boyle? Something Boyle. I can't remember right now. But anyway, there was a few French and German astronomers, and they apparently had done some mathematical calculations on the proper motion of this particular star and predicted that there was at least one star that you can't see with the naked eye that orbits it, known as Sirius B. Then a few years later, an American astronomer actually confirmed that. But I'm wondering if the German that actually did the calculations didn't figure out that there might be three stars around that star and just didn't publicize it for a while. Because in, I believe it was 1893, there was an expedition into Dogon territory to observe an eclipse, in which these French astronomers went into French-controlled Mali and more than likely spoke with the locals there, probably passed the information on to the curious locals about what they were doing there. And 30-something years later, we got Marcel Grial going and living with the Dogon, and they just happened to tell him about their legends, and it includes information about that star that they could have gotten from the French astronomers when they were over there doing their expedition. Did you follow me on that one?
Not really. I'm just going to be honest. Yeah.
Oh, well. Anyhow, the whole premise of the Sirius mystery is pretty much confounded by that one event. The book that Robert Temple wrote has been refuted by a lot of different people on basically the same grounds. And when you do independent research and find out the same thing, then you can start to go, okay, well, this is probably true. These people probably gave them this information. And so much for that one, you know. Plus, if there were stars around Sirius and it is so close to us at, what, 8.6 light years away, I'm pretty sure we would have detected any kind of planetary system or anything like that by now.
I've I've become like this perpetual doomsday naysayer. Like somebody says, Comet Eisen's going to kill us. It's like, ugh. You know, head in your hands, just go, Frank, did Y2K 2012 Nostra dumbass not teach you anything, you retards? The world's not going to end, okay? And even if I'm wrong, okay, what does it matter? Because it wouldn't matter if I was right or wrong, because we're all dead.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, somebody asked me once, you know, what are you going to do if it's actually confirmed, you know, like if there actually is the end of the world and it's coming? I said, well, for the first time in my life, I'll start living in denial. Because, yeah, it's like, it's my doom, it's my doom, yo. And everybody was just so freaked out about this kind of stuff. And every time I think, oh, God, what is it? It's going to end the world. Fukushima's going to end the world. Global warming's going to end the world. Comet Eisen or some of the Anunnaki will come and just you know, flatten everything in some kind of great galactic parking lot project or some crap. You know, who gives a frack how the world ends or if it's going to end or not? There's only one thing you really got to be concerned about. Not what's in the future or necessarily what's in the past, but what you can do right now to affect the future. Usually, it helps if you know what happened in the past.
Right. And that's, you know, I'm still pursuing, you know, research, and it just spiderwebs off in so many different directions and avenues that it's... I have to take it in very small bites to try to digest what it is that I'm saying, but I think I made some pretty logically sound connections as far as linking stuff to symbols and words. Because actually, the particular star... seems to be prominent in all these cultures. It's one of the four royal Persian stars, and has been determined to be something like 5,000 years ago. That belief has been held. And just following the proper motion of this particular star... on the particular program that I use, I can track it back to about 65 million years ago, and it seems to follow a path that bears a striking resemblance to the mythologies of the past, almost as if they were tracking the star and talking about it via mythology.
And what?
And so it also coincides with a couple of prominent civilizations' kings lists. Now, there's no physical way to tell if these people just made up this antediluvian beings that lived here. Or, you know, if we're going to discover in the future that was actually the case, you know, through archaeology or anthropology or genetics. But the star seems to coincide with the time frame that these kings lists describe. For instance, the Sumerian kings list states that their kings started their reigns about 240,000 years ago. That's a crazy amount of time. That's damn near impossible. And not only that, they say that their first king reigned for 28,800 years. Wow, that's quite a long time for one guy to reign, except for the fact that he's called Alu-Lim, and in Semitic language, the suffix "lim" is a plural that's similar to Hebrew Leom, which means the people or nation, and then Alu, the beginning of the beginning word of his name, turns out to be the Akkadian name for the constellation Taurus. So if you put the two words together again, you've got Alulim, the people of the constellation Taurus. And then when you break down the Proto-Germanic root of the word God, you've got Gudan, which is Mul Gudana, which is the star Aldebaran. It's almost as if they're describing their rulers as being from that star. Now, there's some information that can be neither confirmed nor denied about the star actually having planets around it. And it seems that the type of planet that they will neither confirm nor deny, they won't confirm nor deny the age of the star either for some reason. But the type of planet is known as a hot Jupiter. It's got about it's about the same size as Jupiter, they say, but it has 11 times the mass. Well, this particular star is a red giant star, and it's stopped making hydrogen and helium and now makes carbon and oxygen, and it pushes out the layers of hydrogen and helium, which causes it to swell. So logically, I mean, we could probably ascertain that if there was a planetary system around it and it swelled up and cooked them all to death and they all disintegrated, turned into gases and just debris and recoalesced into a planet the size of Jupiter, that might potentially explain the mass associated with this planet they will neither confirm nor deny.
What? So you're saying this, what was it, planet Nibiru, yeah?
I wouldn't necessarily say Nibiru. What I'm saying is it has the telltale signs that it used to have a planetary system around it that was destroyed at one time, and the debris recoalesced into what is neither confirmed nor denied. You could find the ages on pretty much any other star in the sky, but this particular one, nope. I've searched astronomy websites, you name it, looked on NASA, any kind of observatory website for the information just concerning the age of the star, and nope, can't find one word about it.
So is that the only star in the entire sky that they haven't aged yet?
It seems like it. They say it's old, but they don't say how old. For instance, they say the Pleiades, they're 100 million, 200 million years old? You can get an answer for that, but you can't get an answer for one particular red giant.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I wonder how you actually date stars and things like that.
Yeah, that brings up another problem. I can't really...
I mean, do you buy them a drink first, or what?
I hear they're not cheap dates, though.
But they are pretty hot.
Oh, yes, they are. Me too.
Yeah. And also quite bright. Now, thinking of the Pleiadians and the Anunnaki and all of this other kind of stuff, there's another element here, which is the alien messiah complex. And a lot of people have this complex. Oh, I don't have to do anything to try and save the world from evil scumbaggery entities or whatever that are currently infecting our entire planet. No. The Pleiadians are going to save me. They're my space brothers.
Right.
I don't know about you, but the Messiah complex of anything, you know, whether you think Jesus is Buddha or Shiva or George W. Bush is going to save you, is freaking insane, in my opinion. And I don't want to insult everybody's beliefs here, although I clearly just did. But the issue, as Alex Jones would say, the issue here is... the issue here is abdicating personal responsibility for your own life and the lives of those around you. That is something that I think is very important to think about whenever you talk about anybody who's going to come and save you. I mean, didn't Barack Obama say he's going to come and save our asses? You know, if anything, he's just blown more of them up. And
he's doing a great job, isn't he?
Yeah, but you can't criticize him because then you're racist. You know, you can't criticize a politician if he's black. you know, yeah. Or you're the racist. Well, this is what the savior messiah complex comes into, don't you think? It allows people to be easily manipulated to abdicate their responsibility, and it allows these people who pose as your saviors to become your rulers.
Right, and that seems to be the one of the roots of the problem, is that people are very susceptible to this type of mind control. I don't think the Anunnaki are going to come back and save us. it's kind of ridiculous. But what I do think is that there is some pretty insidious plans, you know, whether it's plan A, plan B, plan C, plan D, whatever it is, one of them seems to revolve around using a type of technology after everybody's been indoctrinated into the ancient alien theory, that we're going to need to unite to save the Earth against the aliens, when in actuality it's going to be, you know, our own military forces, if they agree to do that, utilizing technology that's been worked on in secret for years. That's just one aspect.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of elements that come to mind there. One is the propensity for religious fundamentalism around the people of this earth. The other is Project Bluebeam, which is capable, allegedly, of projecting 3D holographic images into the sky with, you know, Jesus coming out of the clouds or something of that nature. And then there's HAARP, which can indeed be tuned so that you can broadcast through HAARP audio signal that is interpreted by the brain, not the ears. So it feels like something's talking inside your head. And on top of that, we have classified military aircraft from, let's say, places like Area 51 and so on and so forth. And right, you combine all of those together, and you think about the Hegelian dialectic, you know, crisis or problem reaction solution. And I've always wondered, would the elite stage an alien invasion or a religious experience globally kind of thing, or something of that nature, using in tandem these different technologies in order to get humanity to think either A1 in the religious context, oh, we're all religious brothers now, there's no need to fight, let's have a one world government to ruthlessly kill and exterminate everybody that we don't like and that doesn't believe in the thing that they just saw, clearly. Or two, it's, oh, there's aliens up against us now. That means that it's aliens versus humans. So that way we need a one loving world government to ruthlessly enslave and exterminate all of us naughty humans in order to fight the aliens with a reduced population.
Right. It just, let me go back to that Pleiadian thing real quick and the Billy Myers story. He states that these beings live on a planet called Era that orbits Teget, which is an actual star in the Pleiades Tegeta. Anyway, he says that the population on Era is exactly the same numerical amount that's listed on the Georgia Guidestones, 500 million. What a coincidence! Era is the plague god of the Sumerians somehow, and the Sabiti call on this plague god for the destruction of humanity, according to the generalized version of the story. So, you know, that kind of speaks to me with in a symbolic way of what this whole thing actually is being promulgated for, I guess. And you hit the nail on the head with the, oh, the aliens are going to come, we've got to unite to save the planet under a one world government type of situation, you know?
There's also the new religion, the new age religion. Growing in size and scope and stupidity.
Right?
I mean, you know, I don't want to insult people, but look, a cult is a cult, regardless of whether or not you believe it's a cult. Okay? That's the end of the frickin' story. And I've seen, studied, and had a look at cults, belief structures, and the people that run them. And I've had a look at a lot of these new ages. It's the same freaking thing, bro. I see nary a difference.
Right. Yes, some of the things some of these people say to me on the internet, I'm just like, okay, but have you looked at this? If you're going to believe that our ancestors came from a star, and because it's written down, you know, it's been written down for thousands of years, why don't we look at the science behind it then? Let's look at something that's at least plausible. And that's basically all I'm doing, putting what is at least plausible to this whole idea, you know, because it does make some sense. In other ways, it doesn't. But, you know, I'm still in the midst of actually sorting all of this information out. And it just seems to lead me into other areas. For instance, the Nazi UFO mystery. The legend says that a woman named Maria Orczyk, and she was allegedly a member or founder of this Vril Society, had received some channeled messages from beings that were from the Aldebaran system. And I thought, well, you know, that's basically what led me into looking into the star in the first place. I'm like, okay. But the messages she received were in a Templar script, and one in a language that was later determined to be ancient Sumerian. Well, that led me to looking into the word God and coming to that not necessarily conclusion, but coming to that piece of the puzzle, it seems that in the search for the roots of the Aryan race, that they ran across some information that pointed them in the direction and into naming that star in the legend, because of the Proto-Germanic root of the word God. And but there's other things involved there. You've got and I hate to bring up his name because this family is involved in almost every damn scandal on the planet, but here we go with Prescott Bush again. Well, it turns out, you know, from what I can ascertain, and, you know, I can't really verify this with 100% accuracy, but what is being said is that this Prescott Bush guy was over serving as a field artillery captain in World War I between the years of 1917 and 1918. He was discharged in mid-1919. Well, the war ended in 1918. Well, he was also trained in intel by the French over there in Europe. And he wasn't discharged till mid-1919. Well, that kind of ties right in there with this whole Nazi UFO legend, where they met in 1919 at a forester's lodge in Berchtesgaden, Germany, and discussed this technology that was going on about this disc-shaped real flying craft, basically a UFO. And I'm wondering, because where I got the information from also says that he was assigned a company of French officers, which would probably mean there are French intelligence officers, right? I'm wondering if this whole Tool Society and this whole Vril Society part of this story is basically covering up the fact that he was over there gathering intel about free energy technology to bring back to the U.S. His dad in 1918, Samuel Prescott Bush had something to do with the coordination of weapons contractors. And these Wunderwaffos, before they were called that, could have been weaponized technology. There's just these weird co-relations in there that would lead me to infer that he was over there, you know, and we all know that he's a member of a secret society, funneling information back to his dad, who has close ties with the Rockefellers in the U.S. About potential weaponization of certain technologies. And then Henry Kissinger talking about we need to depopulate the world, and we have George H.W. running the CIA during the Kennedy assassination, being involved with intelligence. We have H.W. in office as vice president when Reagan got up in front of the UN and started talking about UFOs and uniting the world if we were if we were faced with a threat from a force from beyond, whatever his exact words were. But all of this stuff kind of ties into there, and then if we needed to pinpoint a location where they're saying they're from, they kind of gave it away by saying that the information that was channeled came from beings from Aldebaran. You know, if that's actually the case. And then the symbolism, the religious symbolism anyway, ancient religious symbolism, kind of implies that in and of itself, with the time frames of the position of this star over vast amounts of time, and how it coincides with their kings lists. For instance, 50,000 years ago, a Greek historian, I forget his name right now, had done some type of calculation and said that the ancient Turin kings lists of Egypt go back to about 50,000 years ago. Well, coincidentally, that particular star was in a position where it would have appear that it was between the horns of the bull, which is exactly the type of iconography you see in ancient Egyptian art. And then back to the Sumerian kings list, that particular star at 330,020 years ago was the closest it had ever gotten to this solar system, which for an advanced civilization would have been close enough to permit travel. And if we're created in the image of God and we are creatures of convenience, then they would have waited for the most convenient moment to do so, being closest to our solar system, if that makes any sense.
What's the significance of that would be my question. But let's go to break now, and we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you go anywhere. Ladies and gentlemen, it's now hour number two. Bear in mind, this is a listener-supported broadcast, so if you like the idea of getting unknown people, well-known people, basically just people who can still think, despite the system of media that we currently have in New Zealand, and of course around the world, then please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and set up an automatic payment today. There's a Kiwi Bank account there. There's ways of donating internationally as well. There's even PayPal for those of you on the credit cards. But one rule, if you are going to donate to the show, you have to have your rent paid, your utilities, you have to have your kids fed, and everything has to be sweet ass, all right? I don't want anybody being put in the line of poverty trying to support me. You know what I'm saying? And I want you to take that very, very seriously. Because if you can't take care of yourself, how are you going to take care of somebody else? That's philosophy of G. Edward Griffin. And also, those without power cannot defend freedom. Now, Mark, how old are you, mate, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 43.
You're 43? You're kind of just waking up into this stuff? How many years have you been into it?
Actually, to tell you the truth, I've only been into it for a couple of years. I had an experience, we'll say, with, well, let's just not get into that right now. This is my first interview. I'm not sure.
I reckon we should, because the reasons why we become who we are of some of the things that people most want to hear, because they get to identify with it. And many people, after listening to the wake-up stories of others, often start to have a massive awakening in themselves.
Okay, well, I see your point with that.
But well, it's your choice.
Okay, yeah, I actually don't mind. Basically, you know, brought a product of a broken home. You know, we had pretty decent family, but a couple years ago, I got myself into a spot of trouble, and that was largely brought on by an addiction problem that I had, and trusting individuals that I shouldn't trust, because those individuals set me up with the very people that I now investigate. impartially. And I never really thought much of it until, we'll just say I was on vacation and I read a book, and I know it sounds cliche, but it was the Da Vinci Code series. I read the series of books and I enjoyed it, and I decided I wanted to look into it when I got home from vacation. And so I did, and you know, I'm kind of on the fence about whether or not some of these secret societies are as evil as people portray them to be. I know that there's good people in every organization and bad people in every organization. You know, it's a personal choice whether you want to be a complete scumbag, scumbaggery, to commit scumbaggery, I guess. It's a personal choice of acting that way. And so, you know, the more I investigated this Freemasonry thing, the more I read what they write about, and that kind of actually pointed me in the direction of checking out these ancient religions. And, you know, the short time I've been doing it, I've basically been attracted to the symbolism, basically because of Freemasonry and the occult, if you will. And one thing led to another, and I stumbled across these Nazi UFO legends, you know, that I briefly discussed a while ago. And I was really hardcore into listening to everything, every bad thing everybody had to say about what's going on in the world and who's behind it. And 9 times out of 10, it was a secret society. And I know that that might play a part in this, but I don't think it's the entirety of it. So that basically led me to looking into all this stuff, and I guess to this show.
So this is your very first time on radio. Are you actually interested in some kind of radio career, talking about these things, you know, interviewing the Jordan Maxwells and so on and so forth of this world?
Well, yeah, see, that's the thing. You know, the more I investigate, the more I find out that, you know, it seems like there is a whole counter truth movement going on, and some of the information that comes out is either just blatantly wrong or obfuscated in some way. And, you know, without naming names, you know, I've run across a couple instances of this where I know what I read about in a book, and just because it's in a book doesn't make it any more true. But the information kind of didn't match up what the interview I was listening to at the time had said. I was watching a presentation by somebody you just mentioned, and the logo for the Grand Lodge of England came up, and that particular person had stated that that was something like New York's state logo, and I was like, huh? Where did you come up with that one? But I guess that's neither here nor there. I would like to be a little bit more organized when I speak in person about this stuff. Which is why, which is why it sounds like I'm unprepared right now.
Practice, mate.
I know, this is practice. It is my first time.
Yeah, so there you go.
You popped my cherry, Vinny.
I guess I'm on it.
Anyhow, you were saying?
Well, I was thinking about Freemasonry the other day, and one of my friends is a Freemason, and he firmly believes that there's only one requirement of the gig, and that's to believe that there's a higher power. Now, some people have alleged that that higher power is Satan, right? And they're just trying to keep it concealed from you. But nonetheless, whatever that higher power is that Freemasonry allegedly believes, right? It's an ancient secret society whose membership only have to believe in a higher power. And allegedly in thousands of years of knowledge accumulation within an ancient secret society, that they've still got no clear idea what that higher power is.
Right.
It sounds kind of like lunacy. I think they know what's going on, but they just don't tell their lower members what it is.
I'm pretty sure that's the case. What they write about seems a little on the strange side to me, but at the same time, it correlates to the belief systems of what's been written down in the past by these ancient cultures. And it seems, from what I've read also, that it's based in ancient Judaism, not so much Christianity. The deeper you get into it, you see the more how it relates to Judaism. And I think that might be the basis of the belief that they're all Zionists, you know, conspiracy plotting to take over the world. But, so, you know, a higher power is a good thing to believe in.
Well, something beyond yourself, at any rate, like POW.
Right. I believe there are forces that are beyond our control that, basically you can equate it to nature, I guess. Not that, you know, I don't necessarily need to put a word to it other than say maybe the source of the cause.
Well, I don't know necessarily about source or whatever. What I know is that there's practical benefits to having a belief in a higher power. For example, POW camps in Vietnam. Guess which POWs of the US side survived? The ones who were real strong believers in God. Because when they're trapped away in that cell with no hope of rescue, they're not trapped alone in that cell. Or at least they believe that they're not. And this gives rise to my belief that just having faith in and of itself actually does grant you power. It's a source of strength. Strength that ordinary people just don't have if they don't have any faith. And I think what Tony Robbins talked about is the motivational speaker, is that the problem with America right now is that it's suffering from a crisis of faith. Not faith in their government, not faith in God, but faith in themselves. And I think
I would tend to agree with you on that one.
And I think what occult teachings seem to be bringing to light, and I consider myself a de-occultist, you know, I don't think any of this stuff should be secret. Everybody should know what it is.
Right.
So that way, certain people who want to loud power over you can't really do it, because it equalizes the playing field in my degree to de-occult knowledge. If everybody had the same knowledge, nobody would really be able to hold one over on each other, and it eliminates the power supply more or less for scumbaggery.
Well, right, and I would agree with you 100% on that, and that's one of the premises for this theory that I've adopted as you know, I don't want to say it's 100% true, but it's a theory that I've adopted, and it seems to work because it's backed with things that are provable. And it also brings to light, okay, what's the origin of this whole system of control? Who thought this up? You know, and why is there such a concerted effort, it seems like, to keep certain information about this particular star from us? What's that all about? I haven't been able to figure that one out, and it just seems like it goes hand in hand with all the symbology, some of the mythologies, the stories that seem to relate to not only astrological phenomenon, but astronomical phenomenon. And basically, if this turns out to be the case that we were genetically manipulated species, well, where did the people who did the genetic manipulation come from? Well, then this may hold the answer, the significance of which is that if people realize that we have their DNA, they're no better than us. They don't have any divine right to rule over us. And in a way, if it could help at least springboard people into that frame of mind, then we wouldn't have this, people wouldn't be able to have that type of control over us.
I think what's happening now is, let's take the climate change for a debate. It's about wealth transfer, okay? Let's say they're talking about monetary wealth transfer from the first world to the third world so that everybody will now be equally poor. And sure. What I think is happening now is that we're doing a knowledge transfer instead with this kind of alleged global awakening. And so that everybody will be equally as bright.
Right. I would like, you know, I'd like to see...
But it unfortunately means that the ones currently with huge quantities of knowledge that they don't want to be share, has to be plundered. in the name of saving us from global dumbing.
Right. I'm not sure, you know, from the position I'm in at the moment, what I can do, you know, action-wise to help matters other than to keep doing this investigation and sharing the information that I've come up with or sharing others' information who might have put it together a little better than I have, you know, that would explain the situation, the current situation that we're in. And if I had the ultimate solution as to what to do about it, besides the transfer of knowledge, I would be more than happy to share that. But at the moment, the only thing that I can do from the position that I'm in is to pass on knowledge. You know, something hopefully of use. Something that might get them into, like you said, believing in a higher power, you know, something that would...
Well, I remember when I was, I think I was 12, I said, all that we can do in this life is to learn what we can and in time teach others to do the same.
Right. And... You know, I would like to be able to do more, you know, become actively involved in contributing to the good of this world rather than just sit back and pass information around. But unfortunately, that vacation I took has left me in a position where I'm at the time not able to do that.
You know, it's... Something that happens. You believe in synchronicity, meaningful coincidence?
Very much so.
All right. Here's something I've found. I'll wake up one morning and I'll just think in my head just before I've gotten to my computer that, okay, I've got like $250 rent to pay, $110 phone bill, and I've got food that I've got to buy for the week and everything like that with my wife. And I think I need like about $500 and I just don't have it. And I go to my computer and I check my PayPal account and somebody's donated me $500.
Nice.
you know?
Yeah.
And what's interesting is that I'd like to accumulate wealth and like have a home and a feeling of security and what have you. But every single time that there's some bill that needs to be paid, it gets paid for somehow. I don't know. I can't explain it. I don't actively enforce it and try and make it happen. It just happens. What it says to me is that I'm doing the right thing. Now, when other people get involved in this kind of work, you know, basically we're doing, you know, the higher power's work for them. You know, we're trying to wake up humanity. We're trying to expose scumbaggery. We're trying to do a little bit of nice and good and try and change the way things are by changing ourselves and changing everything around us via our volition and via our action. You know, and when you're getting into it, first of all, that's the first thing that you notice is that you instantly lose everything that you don't really need. And the problem is you felt like you did need them and you get this massive loss. You lose friends. You lose your private property. You lose your sense of happiness and joy in the world. It's actually a really freaking traumatic experience. But the same thing happens, is that just when you think you're about to give up, something will tell you not to give up. Just when you think that you're broke and about to get kicked out, somebody bails you out. And that's what happens when you do the right thing. You spend the bulk of your time suffering, but you always have exactly what you need to get through that suffering. It's quite strange and unique, really.
Exactly, you know, and I personally, I could care less if I ever became a millionaire. And I do have the exact same situation happen on a monthly basis, you know. I could show up to work and not, you know, since I'm a tattoo artist, if nobody's coming through the door, I'm not working. You know, if I don't have any appointments scheduled, and there was a time in the last couple of months where I was like, man, how am I going to make this happen? And I would think about this going, man, I don't know what I'm going to do if I get kicked out of here. I've got no place to go. And right at the last minute, you know, a slew of people comes through the door and saves the day. You know, the same type of situation. And I'm grateful for that, just to be able to do what I do, to be able to do what I love, which affords me the time to pursue other endeavors. And and it always just seems to work out, and I know it's because that I'm trying to do the right thing, just as you said.
The Christians believe that there's this tribulation that's going to happen. 7 years of Christians being persecuted, murdered, being forced to do things against their beliefs and what have you. And they seem okay with it. The ones who actually know what the Bible says, and that you get raptured after you get the tribulation. So basically, here's the lesson, ladies and gentlemen. You got to suffer for a hell of a long time before you get any kind of deliverance.
Right. You know, and I would say through, you know, looking into these things that I've really never looked at before, I'd say it's brought me closer to my creator, so to speak, and has given me a sense of peace. I would like to be able to see humanity through to the point where we're not suffering anymore, but that, you know, realistically may not happen in my lifetime. I would like to, you know, think that helping spark that in humanity is more important than actually seeing it through to the end. I don't necessarily want to see some globalist prison planet either, but, you know, and that comes right back to doing what I can do with the current situation that I'm in. I can only do what I can do at the moment.
Well, I think that's pretty straightforward. And a lot of people have that philosophy. The only thing I can do is what I can do. The problem I have with that is that we don't know what we're capable of until after we do it sometimes. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
A friend of mine, Paul Carruthers, he stood up for this old dude who was like a billionaire in New Zealand, and he got set up by the government, and the government stole all of his massive assets. He was like one of the wealthiest men in the country. And then split it up amongst their mates and stuff like that, that owned all the receivership companies and ran the banking interests that sold off the assets. And wow. And what was real sad is that Paul was standing up for this guy, and everybody was like mudslinging at him. He got set up by the media, he got set up by the cops and all of this other kind of stuff. He managed to beat them, but he kept going and going and going. And what he realized is that you don't realize what kind of courage it takes to do the right thing until after you've done it.
Right. Right. There's the particular situation I'm in kind of has to do with my being compliant with others' wishes at the moment, and I don't want to do anything to upset that or to hinder my chances of being able to do even more later.
You know how some people are worried about job security? I'm not, because my job consists on a consistent supply of scumbaggery and the shockingly large quantities of it. Like, right. I mean, honestly, if the world used scumbaggery as an energy source, oh, mate, we wouldn't have to pay for electricity at all.
You got it, man. You figured out 0 point scumbaggery energy, man. That's it.
0 point scumbaggery. So it'll be like the human centipede. You get all the scumbags all sewn together and whatnot in a Mobius reactor. And, send a charge through there. And it gets powered by infinite scumbaggery. It'd be fantastic.
Perfect. In a perfect world, right?
Yeah. In a perfect world. Now, here's the other thing that I've been realizing since the other day, bro, is that good people don't get... Bad guys don't get assassinated, generally. All right? Only good guys get assassinated. Why is that? Well, because the only person who'd want to really assassinate a bad guy would be a good guy. And good guys don't assassinate people.
Right.
Hey, but it doesn't mean that they haven't tried. Here's another thing. There were so many attempts on the life of Adolf Hitler and dictators and scumbags throughout the centuries, right?
Right.
They always managed to survive somehow. Like... It doesn't matter whether they're being shot at, having a bomb or poison or anything. They all seem to survive. Like they've got this. It's like they've got a dark angel watching over their scumbaggery shoulders that just tells them, you know, there's a brick about to fall off that ledge, bro. Just take a few steps to the left. Step.
Right.
Boom! Brick comes down and misses him. You know, and I think Thomas Sheridan even talked about this, is they have the ability to see things before that they happen, and in order to get themselves out of dangerous situations, like a psychopathic sixth sense of heightened self-preservation. I don't know, I theorize maybe it's because all of their pathways for... fight or flight response, you know, the reptilian brain and what have you, are the only thing that's really active on their brain panel. There's no, there's very little emotions and empathy, compassion and creativity and things of that nature. So I think maybe, kind of like how a blind man gets all his other senses increases, a psychopath gets all his fight or flight modes and senses very highly attuned in some way.
It almost sounds like a chronic paranoia in a way. Just always expecting the worst, you know, but being able to sense when that's going to happen because of a heightened paranoia in a way.
Yeah. It's actually quite funny in a way, because so many conspiracy theorists have that as well.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but I'm proud to call myself a conspiracy theorist, you know. I mean, you know, if you're not a conspiracy theorist, you're an idiot, you know. I mean, you know, you got a choice. You know, people always say, oh, there's two types of people in this world, such and such, and they all got, like, different examples of what those two types of people are, you know.
Yeah, where do you get the examples from? Some book? Tell them the examples?
Well, apparently 97% of statistics are made up. So, now... Now, what I've got the two types of people is you're either a conspiracy theorist who believes that powerful people who have a lot of influence use their power to maintain or grow their influence, or you're a coincidence theorist who believes that everything happens by sheer coincidence. There's no such thing as deceit, collusion, or secrecy.
I would have to call myself a theorist then.
Yeah. And I think we've got to disarm that term. You know, everybody just calls you a conspiracy theorist. Well, what if we just change the term on them? What if we turn conspiracy theorists into something that's good, you know?
Right. Conspiracy scientist.
You know, everybody's trying to rename it and going, I'm a conspiracy factualist, I'm a conspiracy realist, or whatever. The problem is, whenever you use the term conspiracy, people automatically associate it with the word theorist. So it doesn't matter whether you call yourself a conspiracy X, whatever that X might be, people still see you as a conspiracy theorist, and you're just making up BS. So, therefore, the only solution here is to actually change the definition for conspiracy theorist, something that I think is more apt, rather than to mean crazy person.
Sure, why not?
Did I miss something?
No, you didn't miss anything.
Yeah. I mean, how many people...
If you start looking up definitions, I guess you'll find that most conspiracy theorists are considered crazy.
And, incidentally, correct about 90% of the time. Yeah.
Right. Whoops.
It's like people say, oh, there's crazy conspiracy theories out there. Well, of course there are. We're conspiracy theorists for frack's sake. But that doesn't mean that they're all conspiracies are crazy. I mean, here's how you know that conspiracy's not crazy. It's in law, okay? For example, people could be charged with conspiracy and go to jail for several.
More people that act concertedly together are considered co-conspirators.
Exactly. So, conspiracy exists in the law. Correct. All right. So, do leprechauns exist in the law? You know, is it illegal to walk your leprechaun on a dog leash, for example?
No? I would have to say, yeah, that's a violation of leprechaun rights, man.
Yeah. Okay. But there's no actual, but there's no actual law for it. You know why? Because leprechauns don't exist. All right. There's a reason why there's law for conspiracy, because conspiracy exists, and there's not a law for leprechauns because they don't exist. Okay, so if you call somebody a conspiracy theorist and think that makes them crazy, it's like saying somebody's a leprechaun theorist. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, there's arguments out there that leprechauns do exist, you know, and I'm not disparaging the arguments because I haven't looked at them because they sound freaking crazy on the offset.
Hey.
Yeah. See, you know, look, just because we're being ruled by a bunch of ruthless criminals, sociopathic scumbaggery individuals, doesn't mean we can't have a few laughs about it. You know, after all, it's just the end of the world. What are you worried about? You know?
Right.
Think about the immense relief. It's the end of the world in a couple of weeks. No more in-laws.
What are we going to do till the end of the world, man? is there to do?
I can guarantee you the world's supply of weed will run out in minutes if it was ever announced that it would be the end of the world.
It'd be like a nuclear winter with weed smoke, wouldn't it?
Yeah. They literally beat the planet.
Wow. Wow, man. Ah.
It'd be like some kind of post-dystopian kind of like marijuana culture or something like that. You know, like in The Time Machine, how there's these carnivorous marijuana plants that pop out of the ground and snatch people and take them into the underground to be carved up and eaten.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great, wouldn't it?
Somewhat. Like put them to, you know, it'd be great to actually make movies. And this is another thing that I think the truth movement should really get into is counter propaganda warfare. All right, here's what I mean. You know how movies connote certain propaganda themes. You know, you'll have like global warming movies like The Day After Tomorrow and whatever. What if there were counter propaganda movies that the conspiracy theory junket was manufacturing and what have you? Not documentaries, but full featured length Hollywood kind of, you know, with the glitz and the glamour and what have you films that were actually talking about real Shiite Muslim. That'd be rough. I reckon that'd be
jailing bankers, you know, bringing justice into the world, doing away with corruption. Yeah, that'd be great. Mm. Would it sell?
I think that there's a big fantasy behind people to have a disaster be the reason they go to see a movie. Somebody's right. Somebody's life is in terrible trouble or what have you, or there's an alien invasion, or there's a zombie outbreak, or there's a weather storm, or there's a meteor, or there's something else. You know, whatever. There's infinite ways that the world could possibly be destroyed on film. And I like the idea of inserting dialogue, really powerful, meaningful dialogue. I know there's a lot of other radio networks out there, Mark, that play clips from films that say things that actually connote a lot of meaning.
Right, right.
The problem is there are a couple of lines out of an entire film that contain meaning. What if they all did? What if the script was so intense, so powerful, so persuasive in its delivery that it actually became a valuable counter-propaganda warfare tool? It became actually quite literally an anti-brainwashing device so that you would teach people about the fact that they're being brainwashed using brainwashing techniques to do it.
Right. I see that, a very viable way of basically counterintelligence, you know, counter brainwashing, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, we're being attacked on a whole bunch of different fronts. You know, they got a socio-economic hand in the till. There's a racism element so that people will be all divisive and conquered. You know, you're black, you're white, you're Asian, whatever. And they got a religion element in there. So I'm just thinking about this. How many government departments are there? How many Fortune 500, not Fortune 500 companies, because obviously there's only 500 of them. How many major corporations are owned by the big corporate scumbaggery super elite and whatnot? And then if you wanted to create a society to perhaps change that, you'd have to replace it somehow, okay? So let's say we go through it industry by industry, replicate how that industry works, invert it so that it does the direct opposite of whatever it's doing now, and then use it as a weapon against them, step by step the whole way along the thing. That means the earth would change gradually into a better society over time, rather than having a big boom revolution, so that you'd also be using the enemy's very, very slow creep, or as David Icke calls it, the totalitarian tiptoe. But you'd be using it as a pro-libertarian tiptoe.
Right. I see that as actually an excellent way to go about this. Where would we start, though? You know, who's got the proper funding to get it started?
Well, I think it's already begun. And it's begun in many sectors, Okay, and there's levels of participation in those particular sectors. Like, you just take the media, for example. You got people like Alex Jones who have been on mainstream media many times. You know, make what you want of him. He does talk about real stuff, and he's getting mainstream media coverage. This is something that is a great positive sign, as well as, of course, many others.
Is it due to infiltration? We've got, you know, the conspiracy theory with Jesse Ventura. You know, he's appeared on that show a few times.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it just a basic slow infiltration that's happening, or, you know?
It's a slow replacement. Like, have you ever seen the movie The Thing? Well, they're looking down the microscope, and they're trying. And the one guy's just kind of been eaten by the thing, and they've burned it. They've taken a sample of its blood, and it's find out that the cells are still alive. And what its cells are doing is they're getting a hold of and eating the guy's cells, his normal healthy human blood cells. These alien ones were, and then after a small transformation process, they actually become a perfect replicant of the cell.
Right.
Okay. Now, what Alex Jones is doing is he's adopting that practice. So, for example, you've got the nightly news on CNN and CBS. So, what he does is he copies and replicates it into InfoWars nightly news.
Right.
Okay. He has a look at Rush Limbaugh and various other conspiracy talk radio show hosts, Glenn Beck and what have you. He's always listening to his competition. And then he models his radio show and in some cases leads the way on topics of discussions and things of that nature in order to get the biggest and best impact on his audience. He's figured out that there's a lot of times when radio show hosts and what have you will get emotional and or angry on air, and that it boosts their ratings because people are actually very much interested and their ears prick up and their attention gets paid when you have those times in your voice where you're either crying or you're yelling or you're screaming or something of that nature. You see what I'm saying? So he's
making it personal.
Okay, now the problem is, that brings it open to manipulation, and this is where morality comes in, because if you're going to be replicating something that is evil in order to invert it, you've got to make sure that you invert the evil rather than the evil inverting you, which usually means that you've got to have a hell of a lot of people watching your every move and making sure that you don't turn over to the dark side.
Right. I see where you're going with that.
And I don't know 100% precisely how we're going to go about making this happen, because one man can't regulate himself, kind of thing. He always needs other advisors and close regulators around him, especially if he's going to be accumulating power. Then, of course, if you accumulate power, it's got an inherent corruption value in it, doesn't it? You know, it's...
That goes back to what you were saying about morality. You know, you might want to, I don't know if there's any way to measure a person's good faith or morality, you know, just based upon what the person says. But, you know, it goes right back to that action thing. And, you know, there's a lot of people that badmouth Alex Jones. You know, I personally kind of side with some of the stuff that he says, you know, and I have trouble with people that find fault with him, because essentially what he's doing is exactly what he claims to be doing, you know, waking people up. And I have to admit that I watched some stuff that he was privy to information that I wasn't, and I was like, really? Okay, so this is what's going on. And, you know, it helped me to open my eyes a lot quicker to what was going on. There are some things that I disagree with. You know, it's just all about that all bankers and all people involved in that are bad people. I don't think that's a situation. I think there are people that are just devoid of any morality, devoid of any virtue, devoid of any couth, basically, that are the ones that are at the top pulling the strings. And it's those people we need to outsmart in a way. Or, you know, we could do this gangster, but we don't really want to resort to doing that.
Well, you can't. I keep saying this over and over again. Is that good's defined by what you won't do, you know? No, I'm not going to kill U.S. citizens who are resisting an oppressive government. I'm not going to shoot them. No, I'm not going to take their guns either. You know, that's a good person. That's a good thought. I won't restrain myself from doing that. Sure, I'll kill one. I'll kill two. I'll kill 100. I'll kill the children. I'll kill the women. I'll kill the pregnant women. I'll kill the elderly. Yeah, I'll just drag them out into the street and I'll execute them while they're crying on their knees and watching their children as we're taking them away to put them into our pedophile rings. You know,
That's I draw the line there, and if it came to defending against that type of thing, well, then that would be the only reason I would resort to any type of a violent response, you know, especially if it involved members of my family. But even if I saw it happening, I can't let it happen right in front of me. So, like I say, even in the position I'm in, even action as far as protesting is kind of off limits for me at the moment. But what I can do is just shovel information and get it out there, get people at least interested in going, well, maybe that does kind of make sense. Maybe we should look into this ourselves, you know. And just like I did, you know, you pick up one rock and you see a million ants scattering and you try to figure out what each one of those ants were. I don't know if that's the right analogy, but I think you know what I'm getting at. This whole thing spider webs off into a whole slew of topics. But if you can get one person interested in one...
it's a fractal. You know, it's like a repeating pattern. So the further you zoom into the hologram, actually, the more that same pattern that you saw when you were zoomed out starts to replicate itself, and it just goes deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper, and there's no end to it, right?
Right.
And I think that the universe, our cells, and scumbaggery are built on that same principle. You know, there's the fractal universe theory, which is you know, atoms that they haven't found the smallest atom yet. They haven't found the biggest galactic star cluster yet, or anything like that. So my theory is it's frickin' infinite either direction. You know, it's infinitely tiny and infinitely massive, and basically we just kind of have to deal with our little sizable place in the universe, really, you know, because we've got consciousness, which is fantastic.
Right.
You know, I'm not an amoeba, and I wonder what kind of a society would an amoeba run? Apparently one that's filled with, you know, excrement. Anyway.
Very, very asexual. It'd be kind of boring, but
yeah.
Go ahead.
Fractal scumbaggery. Okay, so for each instance of scumbaggery, if you look further into it, suddenly all other masses of scumbaggery will start to come to light in an infinite fashion. And each and every instance of scumbaggery that comes to light off of the last instance of scumbaggery you were looking into, a whole bunch more will fracture out as well. There is an infinite... circles within circles within circles of scumbaggery enveloping virtually everything I see around me at all given times. You know, it's intensely complicated, and that's why it's difficult to come to, you know, real solid understandings of things. I don't, in fact, I've come to a realization just now, Mark. I don't really know what a lot of things are. I just kind of think that I know what a lot of things aren't.
Right, right.
You know,
I agree with you on that one.
But it's not like stuff isn't knowable. There's plenty of things that are pretty straightforward, you know. For example, if I'm tired, I have a cup of coffee, and then I'm not so tired no more.
Oh, yeah, I agree. That's experienced that on a daily basis.
That's freaking knowable, okay? So you can't just say, oh, it's just your perception of the coffee that makes it work. No, because the coffee works every single time on every single body, therefore it's an objective truth, okay?
Right, it's backed by science, exactly.
So we've got all these levels of verification. Oh, but what if those levels of verification are corrupted? It doesn't matter if it's corrupted, because even if it is corrupted, we still know that it freaking works.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Okay, there might be unforeseen circumstances and what have you within them, like heart palpitations and what have you via my cup of coffee, but Jesus Christ, I'd rather have a heart palpitation in 40 years' time than spend 40 years asleep. Or yeah, half exactly. asleep.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, but then again, there's a real suicidal nihilism point behind that, isn't there? You know, well, everybody's going to die sometime, so I'll just smoke cigarettes and drink caffeine and alcohol for the rest of my life until I die. But then again, that doesn't even work sometimes.
Kill you, it makes you stronger.
Allegedly. I was talking to one of my listeners who lives in Trinidad and Tobago, and he drinks rum pretty much every day. His mother's the same, and she's like 89 odd or something, and she smokes a pack of cigarettes a day and drinks a bottle of rum with her friends and everything, and she's still going. And I asked her, so when she's around with all of her friends drinking and smoking and all of that kind of stuff, are they all laughing and joking and actually having a really, really good time when they're doing it? He's like, yeah, they are. And I go, that's why.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
It's almost like your body doesn't want to die when it's having a real good time.
Right. And
I don't know how that works out for BMX bikers, but never mind.
Well, yeah. Sometimes that can be pretty dangerous and whatnot, but...
Hey, have you thought about doing conspiracy tattoos, bro?
Oh, I do them all the time.
Yeah. Maybe there should be the website, conspiracytattoo.com. You have people, like, coming in from out of state or whatever, you know, just flying in to have a chat and get a mean tattoo of an enormous Illuminati all-seeing eye pyramid with a gargantuan spear of destiny being stabbed into the central eyeball.
Oh, yeah. Do it all the time.
I did that, like, yesterday, man.
Did that one a week ago on a federal agent, man. It was crazy.
Word.
I actually do tattoo people that are employed by the government. I can't really go into what organizations or anything, but... I do chat with them, and I do give them a piece of my mind, and I try to elicit a response from them, and I'm fairly confident that if shit ever hit the fan, that we'd be in pretty good shape.
Mm-hmm. So you ever done a tattoo of a small girl getting crushed by a boot heel on the shoulder of a police officer sergeant or something like that?
Oh, no, I haven't done the Denver Airport mural as a back piece yet, but I'm sure somebody will come in and ask for it sooner or later.
Yeah. In fact, that would be pretty hilarious, actually, seeing somebody with the Denver Airport mural on their back.
Oh,
gas mask and stuff. Whoa, that'd be a hell of a lot of work, don't you think?
Yeah, it'd be a little... I know somebody that specializes in that type of stuff. Let me give you his number. There's certain things I probably wouldn't do. I, for one, am attracted to the, I guess you could call it Illuminati symbolism. So I don't mind doing stuff like that, as long as it's not just outright derogatory, as long as it's not straight up gang related. And I really wish that somebody would stick a virus in Pinterest and Google Images, because that's pretty much all we get nowadays are people coming in with, hey, I got something on my phone. Oh, really? What is it? Oh, it's a bunch of words on my rib cage. Oh, really? Cool, man. I'll get right on that. Thanks.
Have you noticed that people are getting dumber, less independent, less creative?
Yeah.
That response sounds like it's been drastic.
Oh, man. Well, you'd be surprised at the total lack of originality of in its stems from, you know, people doing not really doing their homework, I guess. Oh, that looks cool on that person. I want that. Can you do that? Well, that's on some I know, but I want that. Okay. And then you can't really say, well, you know what? That's a crappy tattoo. You know, look at the shitty job the guy did. You want me to do a crappy tattoo on you, too? Oh, great. That's really good for my reputation. That's really going to give our shop a good name, you know? And like, okay, you saw some movie star that had some writing on her ribs and you think that's cool, huh? How are you going to think about that in about, you know, 20, 30, maybe 40 years? Are you sure you want this tattoo? It's that type of thing. And yes, it's a little burned out, so to speak. I wish people would come and go, hey, I want a cool dagger stabbing an eyeball with flames going up the handle of the sword, but I want your artwork. Can you draw this for me? Oh, sure, cool, man. I could make that look cool. Let me sketch something up for you. How does that look? Oh, awesome, man. Better than I pictured. Let's do this. Can I set an appointment? Yeah, sure, let's do this. But instead, it's gotten so dependent on electronics. You know, you can't walk down the street without somebody's nose in their phone. Hell, I'm sitting here doing an interview on the internet. I'm victimized by it too, but it's a useful tool. But anyway, in situations like that, tattooing, come on, people, let's give your tattoo artist something cool to tattoo, please.
Maybe you just got to make lemonade out of lemons, and like when they come at you with a tattoo idea or something like that that they got off Google Images, you go, okay, give me a look at this, and I'll sketch something up for you, and just make it part of the service that you actually do your rendition of what it is that they think that they want.
I try my damnedest sometimes.
Really? They actually refuse having it original. They want to be like everybody else.
Right.
Oh.
That's what's getting burned out. I'm like, man, why do I even do this? Do I look like a damn typewriter? Come on, people.
I mean, you have 3D printers, people.
Yeah. You know, I had an idea a long time ago to make sort of like an iron lung type thing. And wherever you wanted your tattoo, this mechanism would come and wrap around that part of the body and this pre-programmed tattoo that you want into the computer before you got into the machine would come zap, and it'd only take a second and it'd all be beautiful and colorful. But that technology is probably pretty far off in the future right now.
Oh, you never know. Never. Hey, you know, all you're going to do is just think about this. What if it's not necessarily a machine, but it's like a cattle branding, you know, like a very sophisticated cattle brand, you know, very, very intricately designed and like woven together and what have you. Just sow.
If we could make lasers that would inject pigment somehow through the light waves into your skin, that'd be awesome.
Mm.
Then you could just, one guy, one tattoo artist, former tattoo artist, could own a shop that you go into. There is no tattoo artist in here. What's up with that? Sit down in this chair. What kind of tattoo you want? Oh, you got
one. I want a barcode on the back of my head like everybody else.
Oh, well, Go over to this government office with your ID. They got a special on those this week.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's available in thermal imprint, too.
Yeah. And biometric. Okay, we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with Mark Sellett. Don't you go anywhere. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number 3 of the most thrilling 3 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. And my very special guest is still Mark Sellott. Is it Sellott?
Sellott.
Sellott. Okay.
Sellott.
Like, is there...
like the marker pens.
I've never seen those marker pens. I live in New Zealand, bro. Maybe there's a little bit of a branding thing. Like, we've got... Yeah, we've got the magic markers. We call them Vivids.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. Do you have Bic lighters?
We have Bic lighters, yes.
Yeah, well, Bic makes Vivids as well.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen those yet.
Yeah, yeah. Well, see, that's the difference. Have you ever seen that scene from Pulp Fiction, where he talks about how he goes to Amsterdam, and it's they got the same stuff that they got over here, but just it's just a little different.
Right, right, yeah.
Yeah, and I was noticing this the other day, just watching a few documentaries about people driving around England, driving around Australia, driving around America, and then remembering me driving around New Zealand, and I was like, it all looks the same.
Except they drive on the wrong side of the road for some reason.
Actually, they drive on the left side of the road.
Well, then it's left. Wrong?
Oh, I don't know. If it's not right, is it necessarily wrong?
It could be left, right?
Yeah. And what's interesting about driving is that people forget how difficult it was to survive back in the day. Okay, so for example, you want to go get yourself some food. All right, you don't have to like drive down a rickety unlit road on a kind of horse and carriage or something of that nature for 18 miles to the general store just so you can get a bag of potatoes so that you can go back and then boil up those potatoes and then just, you know, that's really all you got. You know, we've got huge quantities of choices. Everything's frickin' easy now, and you know what happens when people have got it too easy for too frickin' long? They become frickin' complacent.
Very complacent. I've noticed that.
Yeah. But how exactly do you convince people to say, hey, you know what, bro, we've got it way too easy. We now need to exist in a society that encourages hardship and taking ages to get somewhere and do something.
Well, you know, why don't we reroute the way we use technology? Why do we need to use technology for weaponry? What does that solve? What, you know, if there's going to be an alien invasion, sure, we need to defend ourselves, and that's, you know, it's a reason to have it, but why don't we utilize technology for the complacent people, the ones that don't want to work, don't want to contribute? Well, we've got technology to solve that for you. If the money faucet... And I'm saying, you know, if there was a choice globally that we made, the money faucet was turned off. There's no more money. Would you still do what you do? I mean, if we're all getting along and we got rid of the scumbaggery, I mean, you wouldn't really have to do what you do. But because you enjoy it, would you still do what you do?
I think my... Yeah. I think my brother told me one time that he was trying to sell this stuff called Body Balance, and it's kind of sort of like a pyramid scheme, but allegedly not. And of course, every pyramid scheme says it's allegedly not. And he said that if you had enough of that residual income, that passive income, so that all of your costs were paid for, you could walk into any job anywhere and just say, "I want to do this job, and I don't care if you pay me."
Right. Right. Well, it'd be kind of like that situation. You know, in some of these utopian philosophies, you know, you assign people to do things that they're good at. So if you're good at science, you know, and you want to do science, go ahead and do that. You know, I do tattoos and I do them, you know, decent. My customers tell me I do them extremely well, you know. Cool, right on. I would still do that if it was, you know, if the money faucet was turned off, if I didn't need to have money to pay rent, even if to pay my bills, to have a phone, to eat, any of that. If I didn't need the capital to do that, I'd probably still do what I do.
Well, we do need those things covered, you know, food, shelter, water, and internet.
Right, and we're all collectively capable of providing that for each other. Why don't we do it? That's... It boggles my mind why that's not... That hasn't been done from the get-go, you know?
Well, you already know the answer to that question. Is there a bunch of ruthless criminal psychopaths in charge of that entire system that own all those resources and don't want to share them?
Exactly.
Yeah, no, it's pretty straightforward. And what people do is they get themselves into these ruts sometimes, and they ask themselves questions that they already know, and they ask themselves endlessly. And they're asking the wrong question if that's the case. The question is, what am I going to do about it? Not what are you going to do about it, but what am I going to do about it? And that's not a rhetorical question, you know. Some people were like, I'll talk to them about conspiracy or scumbagger, and they go, "Oh, yeah, but what are you going to do about it?" And I say, "Well, I'm not going to take that as a rhetorical question. I'm going to actually try and answer that question." Well, what do scumbags fear? Exposure.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, I say that if they're really afraid of exposure, we threaten to lock them outside on a rainy night or something. You know, maybe they'll die of it.
Oh, they'll learn their lesson that way, huh?
You know,
I do get your gist, though. Yes.
Yeah. I'm just making a joke, though. I don't want to have anybody killed or stuff like that. It's just crazy. And in fact, I really don't like that whole idea of a violent uprising or revolution or something like that. It would have to be defensive if it was to be fought at all. You know, which means you have to wait for the enemy to strike first. But then again, I don't know. I'm not really a military strategist, am I?
It's kind of what the complacent world is doing nowadays, especially in the United States, is waiting for that first move. That's what I've noticed. You know, it's like everybody knows that this and that is going on, but nobody's willing to take that first step. You know, they're waiting for the first punch to be thrown, basically, and they're getting away with... quite a bit without even having to throw punches because they know that that's what we're waiting for. You know?
Oh, yeah. And does that mean that we should institute some kind of a first strike? Because then think about what kind of a justification that would then have for the establishment. Oh, my God, there's an uprising. We need to pass more legislation and have even more guns and tanks and hollow point ammunition and what have you to quell this terrible uprising. And by the way, right. We can't handle this uprising by ourselves in the United States, so we're going to ask NATO to intervene, and also we're going to form a one-world government to protect ourselves from the savages.
Right. Yeah, I do see that scenario if we choose to act in accordingly. And, you know, what you were talking about earlier, basically playing their game and outsmarting them at their own game, or not even necessarily outsmarting them, just there are enough of us that are fed up with the way things are going. If enough of us got together and instituted these types of outlets per se, then the problem, you know, would be, instead of being an evil entity, you know, be replaced with peaceful, loving, you know, caring society that actually gives a crap about the people on this planet other than themselves.
In an ideal world, of course, and
right.
Yeah, see, and the other element here, something Jack Blood told me, is that there is no utopia, and I'm inclined to believe him, because even if we did create a utopia, what we'd do is we'd only simply recreate the exact same kind of utopian vision of today, where people would just become complacent with utopia and want to, freaking kill themselves, because it's just so dull. You know, I mean, my grandfather, he, like, one of the reasons he wasn't Christian is because he thought that playing a harp for eternity on a cloud was a pretty crappy afterlife. You know, you see, yeah. Like, all of this Christianity goes, look, if you can tell me why spending the all eternity playing harp on a fracking cloud is worth it, you know, convince me.
Right. Well, I mean, that. You know, goes into, you know, maybe we should figure out things to do. How about let's figure out how to get off this rock? Let's go check out other stuff. Isn't that cool? Isn't that adventurous?
Yeah, but if we don't solve our problems here first, we're simply going to export them to another planet like a virus introduced to a new body.
Right. And that's, you know, basically what these ancient traditions kind of tell us what happened here. If we are inclined to take that route of belief. You know, if we're going to view this, you know, for the sake of argument, from an ancient alien perspective, and that seems to be what the media is trying to portray, then we may have gotten to the root of the problem of our tendencies, because, you know, most of these ancient texts talk about ancient gods warring with each other. So these were some warlike individuals, and if we're creating those the images of these gods that came here, then it would kind of tend to explain somewhat our tendencies to act like them.
When you have a an idol, for example, you know, and that idol suddenly falls past your expectations. You're like, actually, it's not all that he's cracked up to be. You know,
right.
you get real kind of, it's almost like a part of yourself dies with that idea, if you know what I mean. You put somebody up on a pedestal, and then when they come crashing down on it, you're the one that gets crushed. And
right.
I think people have to do perhaps similar to myself and many others, is that you kind of forget the whole idea of messiahs, you forget the whole idea of idols. You can look up to people, sure, but always with the proviso that they're a human being with faults like everybody else. Some people are really, really great speakers and thinkers and what have you, and then off the record, they're just absolute douchebags. You know, I know this personally.
Right.
And that's the thing. If somebody's two-faced, really, you know, they've got a public persona and a private persona, and those two are so far askew. I think that's part of the massive difficulty that we have with this media junket, actually, to a large degree, is because I've got a funny feeling that if you get like 10 million listeners or something of that nature, then you wind up getting approached and or corrupted, or this is just for the sake of argument. So
right.
what if you wanted to get 10 million people listening, but you didn't want to have that 10 million yourself? What if you trained 9 other people how to get themselves a million listeners? And that way, there's 10 million people listening to the same ideas, more or less, and you do the same amount of damage to the scumbaggery system without really even approaching on their radar.
Well, that's actually pretty much the way it's looking like it needs to be done. You know, there's, and I'm going to go back to the analogies of these texts, the 144,000. If you yourself got just 144,000 listeners, we'll say, and each one of those 144,000 got 144,000 listeners for themselves of the basically underneath the same premise, the same umbrella of ideals, the word would get spread pretty quick, and it would almost snowball in effect to where it would be unstoppable unless, you know, the use of force came into play to try to stop it, which I don't want to say is an inevitability, because it's almost, well, I don't know. They're pretty bold. They would probably try some pretty deep scumbaggery, if you will, to try to put a stop to it. But once the snowball effects, you take one part of that, 144,000 out of the equation, you still got the other 130 something thousand, I don't know, I'm not into doing math right this second, but you see what I'm saying? Once you start the snowball effect, once you get the ball rolling, it will continue to go until hopefully the scumbaggery is eradicated and we can get on and do some worthwhile things with our species.
Well, I'm wondering whether or not scumbaggery is actually maybe necessary, okay? Let's say, for example, there was no such thing as deception. Have you ever seen that film, The Invention of Lying?
No, I haven't.
No, well, it's in a world where everybody tells the absolute 100% truth, and it can be pretty harsh and whatnot. And this one guy figures out that he can lie, right? And so he needs $800 for his rent, but he's only got $200 in his account. So he goes to the bank, and she says, "How much money is in your account?" And he goes, $800. And she goes, "Okay, sir, it says it is only $200 in the system here. There must be some kind of mistake." And he goes, "Here's your $800, sir." You know? And his mother's dying, and she's really afraid because she doesn't think that there's an afterlife or anything like that, that there's nothing but blackness and you just get eaten by worms. And he goes, no, Mum, that's not true. You know, you get a mansion and it's really happy and it's beautiful and it's bright and all the favourite people that you've ever met in your life will be there, all your family and everybody else who's ever died will be there too to help you enjoy your fun for the rest of eternity." You know, and this is such a profound thing that his mother died with a smile on her face. And what occurred to me is the juncture there is that the film's implying that religion, afterlife, and all of these belief structures and everything of that nature was invented. You know, somebody made it up just to make people feel better about themselves or something like that, or to accumulate wealth or power or fame. As this character did in this film. And it occurs to me that we're kind of in a world that's similar to that, except people think that they're being told the truth by the people who only tell lies. That's where the difficulty really comes in, because it's quite hard. If you've ever watched a news piece or something of this nature that has X amount of lies. Let's say it's got 100 lies. And you have a conspiracy person sitting through that one news piece, which might only be 30 seconds long, and they have to do a 20-minute video explaining these lies and what the actual truth is. Okay? It's kind of like that. They don't have to do a hell of a lot of lying, but you do have to do a hell of a lot of truth-telling in order to undo it entirely.
Right.
So people don't have time for that. So they just accept the lie.
Well, yeah. I mean, some people, I'm assuming that you do quite a bit of looking into these things, and exposing lies is pretty much what you're all about, right?
To a degree.
It's also, I think more people do need to be made aware of such things so that it will enable them to be able to think for themselves and discern what is true and what is a lie, you know, and there's no 100% guaranteed way or 100% guaranteed method that works for doing that other than looking into it and hoping that the information that you're digging up is correct.
Well, that's trusting to hope rather than trusting to evidence.
Well, I mean, that's part of digging up the information. Then you have to ascertain whether that information is true or not, you know, and you try to base what you can on evidence that would support that what you dug up was true.
Mm-hmm. There's a flip side to this as well. For example, suppression syndrome. You would agree that many different belief structures, alternative, maybe fringe science, and even really far-out ideas get suppressed, or at the very least not supported and propagated very well. And I think it's because people have got all these rules about what's true, all right? I was thinking about this yesterday, is creative people get told by other people many times that they're not following the rules and they need to do such and such and follow all of these protocols and whatnot. And those people have to tell the creative people that because they don't have any creativity left because they got destroyed, because they had it destroyed by following all them rules.
Right. Well, some of the creative people need to take that creative approach to use their better judgment as to ascertaining whether these rules are being told are right or wrong, and you can creatively use the rules to your advantage then by creating solutions to, let's say, make it appear as if you're following those rules when you're just really doing it your own way.
There's a lot to be said of the value of doing things your own way. What was the name? Burt Munro is the world's fastest Indian. Have you heard of that film? The old dude in his old shed. Made the world's fastest motorbike, you know, out of an old Indian. And and I think a lot of invention happens that way. It's just one person gets an idea in their head. It's almost like a vision. And they set about trying to bring that vision into existence. You know, they literally will it into existence. And it's the same with even doing tattoos. You know, you do a design and then you do the tattoo. It's bringing something that wasn't into existence. Now, what's interesting about this, and even in the form of tattoo, there's a book called Spiritual Tattoo by John Lash, and I think maybe if you ever wanted to start doing radio or something, you'd like to interview him, is that tattoos actually have a profound spiritual effect on people sometimes. Now, if that's the case, that means that you're doing something physical that has a spiritual effect on somebody else, right?
Now, well, originally, they're rites of passage. So, yeah, yeah, I get what you're saying. Go ahead.
Okay. And one of my profound thoughts I had a couple of weeks ago was that the things that we do in this physical realm transcend levels of effect. Okay, so let's say you're trying to do something for your mental betterment or your spiritual betterment or your physical betterment. There's possibility that you can invent things, bring things into existence that can benefit not only people's physical lives or mental, but also the spiritual at the same time. And what this means for me is that the things that you bring into existence are actually the most important and profound things that you can produce in order to affect the physical, mental, and spiritual construct of this world. And it's not about having possessions per se. It's about applying the physical arts, whatever, or even digital arts, or whatever, any way that you can create something. Use that freaking creativity. That is the most powerful thing that we have. And the New World Order suppressing all of that creativity, or as much as they can, really, within reason, without it appearing like they're suppressing everything, because otherwise you wouldn't have people with plausible deniability, would you? You know. I think what I want to do is these interviews with people like you have never even been on radio before. I want to create one of the world's largest online audio and video archives available for public consumption for free, and also they can download, edit and cut together anything they want out of it. They can create their own radio shows out of ones that I've done with clips and what have you, or their own documentaries with sections of guests that I've interviewed and cut me out of them completely. I don't care, because there's a hell of a lot of real profound stuff that gets said on this show, and a lot of really important things that are being done as a result of some people coming on to this radio broadcast. And I think that that needs to be shared. You know, that's what I feel is actually a physical contribution to people. So if we talk about health, it benefits people physically. If we talk about metaphysics, it benefits people spiritually. And if we talk about anything that has information that people don't already know, it benefits them mentally. So I'm creating a massive construct by which to affect people in not just one or two ways, but in massive quantitative ways.
Well, yeah, that's the point, isn't it? Well, I kind of equate that to tattooing in a way, because in a way, you know, even if I think the idea is completely not even worth tattooing or something, at the end of the tattoo, you know, it's kind of like a bonding type thing, you know. So in a way, I'm playing psychologist. As a matter of fact, some clients come in there and want to tell you all about the reasons they're getting the tattoos. So not only does it help them, you know, maybe with an issue they have with the way they look, which is why they want the tattoo in the first place, it also gives them a chance to, you know, get some things off their chest, you know, so it helps them out psychologically. They get a really cool looking tattoo, so it helps them feel better about themselves. And so I feel in that department, what I do is helping people. And at the same time, it's a way to pick up some change, because right now we live under a monetary system, and that's the only thing I really know how to do. But anyway,
so hard for people to even envision a new system, don't you think? Because they've grown up with the monetary system their whole life. Kind of like how it can be quite a difficult awakening experience to realize that everything you've been brought up to believe in your entire life has been a lie, and then they don't. And then of course,
yeah, it's every, pretty,
everybody whinges about, you're just talking about the problems, you're not proposing the solutions. Well, mother fracker, if you don't know what the problems are, how in the frack is anybody going to solve them, okay?
Exactly.
And not to mention, I'm just a douchebag 29-year-old with a microphone, okay? You expect me to solve the world's problems, yo? I mean, you know, I can listen to them and philosophize about them, but that's kind of the extent of my power, you know, and perhaps triggers other people off on that kind of thing to help, I don't know, contribute in their own way rather than only listening to other people describe the problems, actually to come up with some solutions on your own, spend some of your time on it, spend some of your creativity coming up with a solution, maybe, huh? Instead of waiting for everybody else to solve your frickin' problems and tell you what the solution is, you know?
Right. Yeah, well, you're doing an awesome job, man, and you've got some very good ideas. You know, if we can get enough people behind this and into it, you know, we got to, in a way, convince people that a change needs to be made, and the only option of doing that is exposing these injustices that have been, you know... that have hindered mankind from progressing for a long, long time. You know, the whole monetary system and banking structure and scumbaggery involved in that, you know, that's gone on long enough, people. We really need to take a serious look at this and go, well, what do we want to do about it? You know, if, especially in America, if we're supposed to be a republic, for the people, we need to start standing up and going, hey, we don't like this. And, you know, if, like in my profession, I happen to tattoo people that work for the very people that I disagree with, so I get a chance to explain my perspective on matters and get some feedback from them. And that's why I'm confident that if enough people get involved, the outcome is going to be good. I kind of have a positive outlook on this whole thing. I realize that there's all kinds of crap going on, but in the end, I also realize that a lot of these people that are employed by the people committing these atrocities are trying to get a paycheck because they have to.
You'll be surprised what people will do if they think that they have to do it.
Right. Well, I mean, it's not really surprising because they're out there doing it, you know? God.
I don't know about you, but I really hated school. I hated being an employee. I hated being a child, you know, because at all of those points, I had somebody else telling me what to do.
Yeah.
And now I'm an adult, and I think that those days are all over, but it turns out that when you're an adult, and you, even if you're self-employed, you still got these frackers telling you what to do. You know, you got the cops, the tax department, and all of these other warrants of officialdom. I mean, it's like, Jesus, how many freaking departments of the government do they freaking need to send you letters about stuff, you know? How many Amazonian cultures have disappeared off of the face of the earth just from the production of IRS receipts and the we're just freaking spinning our wheels here, you know. And I really don't like the idea of taxation, especially if it doesn't have any representation. I think wars have been fought over this, you know. I'm sure of it.
they've at least been perpetuated.
Now, there's this whole us versus them mentality, and some people have been saying, oh, that's just dualistic, it's just us versus them, and you're just promoting division. Hold on a second. Do you think that there is no division between a ruthless criminal psychopath that has $1 trillion to their name and participates in global scumbaggery, false flag terrorism, contamination of the food supply, and all of that kind of stuff? Did you think that there's actually no difference between one of those people and, say, I don't know, somebody who tries to do some good in this world, makes herbal products or something like that and sells them online? Are you telling me that there's no freaking difference, that it's just some kind of false duality? No, it's a real duality, actually.
It's very real, yes.
I mean, what happens at night? Does it transfer from sunlight to just some other kind of sunlight? Or does it just go from light to dark? You know, are you going to claim that that's a false duality? You know, that there's planets and then there's stars. Are you going to claim that that's a false duality? I mean, come on. Here's the thing. Certain things are pretty obvious. And if you think like a madman and you don't think anything is real and you don't have any concept of objective truth or something of that nature, then what you're going to do is you're just going to wind up propagating fallacies the entire way through your life through solipsism. Everything is a result of my perception. Really? How about you perceive me actually agreeing with your nonsense right now? See how that works out for you.
Oh, wow. You couldn't have said it better myself.
And it's kind of like frustrating. It's but what's good, and noticed this on Facebook the other day, is when New Age nonsense cultists block you on Facebook, it saves me the hassle.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Vinny, you're talking about this false dualism. I'm going to block you. Thank frack for that. Cheers, bro. Yeah. Save me 2 clicks.
Favorite, huh?
You know, I mean, there's only a certain amount of clicks I can do per day, man. You know, thanks for helping me out, you know. And also, I don't need to continue this ridiculous conversation with you where you don't have any facts or evidence to back up your case or any logic or any higher spiritual awareness either, while also at the same time claiming that that's what I'm doing. I'm sorry, it's not. This is the real duality. You're an idiot. I'm not. Okay, it's not like I'm the smartest guy in the world. I'm just not a gullible idiot anymore. Not as gullible as I was. Probably still maybe a little gullible. Everybody's still a little gullible. I like that sentence right there. You know, kind of like the word gargantuan. And GMO foods. This is another thing. You know, the cancer causing giant tumors from rats and stuff like that. There's been a number of pictures circulating around, Mark, about farmers putting out like a cob of corn that's non-GMO and a cob of corn that is GMO and leave it outside for a couple of months. And he's got rats in his barn, right? The rats don't touch the GMO corn, right? The bugs don't touch it. The regular corn is gone, right? And then you go into a supermarket. And people get upset if they see that there's a bite in their lettuce leaf or something like that. Oh, my God, yuck, a bug has eaten it. Okay, well, here's the equation. The GMO stuff has no bug bites, has no rat bites, has no nothing. In fact, the bugs and the rats won't eat it, but people will. And the organic stuff that has bug bites and everything like that in it, which the rats will eat and the bugs will, humans won't. Because they're afraid of some kind of cosmetic thing.
The animals know better, and the humans been indoctrinated into thinking that it's okay to eat this stuff. Good for ya.
It'll kill all the bugs, you know?
Yeah. It's good for you, though. Yeah, it can't be killed in the field.
It's like, bro, do they have Roundup ready table sauce or something like that, you know, like a condiments range from Monsanto where you could just, you know, sprinkle a little Roundup on your salad or something like that so it dies and then is therefore good to eat.
yeah and then get like a pepper grinder full of rat poison. That'd be great.
Yeah,
delicious.
Yeah. And it'd be even better if you water it down, you know, and put it into the public municipal drinking water, you know. How about that? Oh, well, they're already doing that, aren't they?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, and I really wanted to run for parliament. And not seriously. Like, I couldn't handle the responsibility, honestly, of telling everybody what to do. Just, like, I'm not that responsible. Go up and you say, vote for me, everybody. I'm going to sell the country out to foreign banks.
Yeah.
I'm going to open up our national parks for mining and fracking operations from international oil cartels. I'm going to pass successive legislation that robs you of all your private property and your human rights. I'm going to manipulate the economy so that it looks like it's still stable, when in the meantime it's actually fallen in the hole even worse. I'm going to raise the amount of incalculable debt that we've got, but I'm going to hide it from you what the actual numbers are, so that I can sell out every bit of worth for you and every single subsequent generation to banksters that have controlled the wealth from all of their subsequent generations. previous one, sorry. And I'm also going to just basically lie to you blatantly about everything that I'm doing. So, nothing will change. So vote for me.
And your opponent can be exactly what you described, but the opposite political party. Wow, that would be great.
Yeah, I mean, just basically you run a similar logo or similar color to the mainstream political party that does all of these things. And then what you do is you just reword all of their policies so it tells the truth, and then run on the campaign platform right next to them, so that when you're speaking, everybody's laughing, but they're not laughing at you, they're laughing at the other guys. You know? And another idea is you go dressed in a big rainbow wig, you know, clown shoes and a red nose and all of that kind of stuff, and you go, I'm from the clown party, vote for me. I'm way less corrupt than the rest of these clowns.
Or just a pretty good old fashioned, a vote for me doesn't mean a goddamn thing.
You know what? Actually, it'd be a better idea. Get a really, really, and I mean really, sexy girl to run, you know, they'll vote for breasts, I guarantee.
Yes. They realize this.
Yeah. But the problem is it's always like middle-aged chicks or something like that. I mean, we want a girl in her early 20s, you know, a girl that's nice and ripe, that will be I'm kind of showing my misogynistic side here, sorry ladies, but but it's true. You are objects of men's affections. We love it. We can't get enough of you. And it's just that simple. And we can use your hotness and cuteness to solicit votes out of a randy general bloke population. Okay? And that way we can win by a landslide just from the use of extraordinarily nice breasts. All right? And we can actually do something good in this world and have something good to look at. What's wrong with that?
Nothing. Nothing at all, sir.
Yeah. You know, I mean, have you ever seen a man get asked for a cigarette or a light or something from a beautiful woman, and he falls all over himself and just quickly fumbles as quickly as he can to get that? You know?
Have I seen it happen?
Yeah.
Or has it happened to me?
Well, either column A or column B.
It happens.
Yeah, it does happen. And I think what we could do is we could use that to our advantage, you know. The New World Order's manipulated people to the point where they're pretty easily manipulated. You'd agree on that. Okay, so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So what you can do is you just come out blatantly. But then... what's the moral turpitude here? You know, are we just going to make things frickin' worse?
Well, getting rid of certain ways we do things, I see it as a solution. If we're going to... Are we going to elect individuals? Are we still going to select individuals? Or, you know, it's... I don't really see a point in voting, because then, one, I'd be part of the problem, but two, it doesn't really make a damn bit of difference, because these people, you know, if you do enough homework, are pre-selected, and at least here in the States, it's not like your vote matters. It's all a dog and pony show. These people are put into power because they have certain bloodlines. What the hell is that? Jeez. And basically, it's we work. It's change and hope, and we heard that in 2008, and then you said the exact same thing this last run around, and it seemed like there was evidence going around the internet that they had already figured this one out beforehand, because they let a news station let a little toll ticker screenshot thing slip on a news channel where it said who the winner was already. And I just don't see this system continuing and getting any better, no matter if we put steaming hot chick, you know, as a candidate in there or not. You know, yeah, it'll get some votes for sure, but is it really going to change anything? I mean,
well, I say we should just try just for the hell of it. I mean, what's the worst?
I agree with you on that one.
What's the worst that could happen? You know,
I do agree with you on that one. By the way,
you know, I mean, I don't think boobs have been responsible for anything bad before. It's kind of like marijuana; that never killed anybody.
They've almost put an eye out a couple times, but they haven't killed anybody.
Yeah. Especially Madonna. Now,
Oh, yeah.
Considering this state of being, okay, let's just kind of get a little bit deep and philosophical now.
All right.
Can we have a moment of clarity for once in our lives? Stop doing what we're doing and just be. You kind of think to yourself, all of this stuff is going on. You're always thinking. I watched this film called Capote last night. And he told a story in the film that was really quite profound. As his father called him up and said that his mother had died. And it was based on a true story. And so he came home, and his father grabbed him by the hand and he said, "Talk." He said, "I don't care what you're saying. I don't care if I agree with the subject matter or anything. Just talk." Because he couldn't bear to be alone with his own thoughts, because the grief was still too much.
Wow, it's funny that you bring that up, because I'm in a situation that's very similar to that. I live with a guy who just lost his wife. He's approaching 70, or I think maybe he's even older, in his 70s. Just lost his wife, and he loves it when I go out there and philosophize with him. Usually I have more of a a structured way of telling the story that I tell, but he just loves it, man. He eats it up. He's like, "You know, if it wasn't for you and Jim here, that I don't know what I'd do. You know, just to talk to somebody is just, you know, it does a world of good for me. And, you know, I feel good to have the opportunity to do that. You know, I actually consider the guy a friend, you know." And he's, my moving in with him actually helped me out in some hard times. I don't mind paying it forward again, you know, if it helps him. I like going out there and go, "Hey, check this out, John, blah, 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 blah," and running down, you know, some of this information to him and getting feedback from him. And one thing that's quite odd, I'm a tattoo artist, and he is a Mormon who's pretty high up in his church, to the high priest level, I guess he says. But to have that opportunity to take some of this emotional burden off his mind is, and at the same time, let her rip with the information and get it off my chest. It's kind of a copacetic relationship, and I could see that it helps both of us actually, to be able to speak freely about it. And, you know, the fact that I could talk about certain subjects with him and him not get offended or think I'm the devil or something because of some of the stuff that I talk about, is evident that the feeling is mutual. You know, he needs the attention, needs somebody to talk to, helps him forget about his wife. I could only imagine what he's going through with that. And it's an enjoyable thing for me to be able to have the opportunity to do that. And hopefully it continues. Anywho.
Yeah. One thing that people tend to forget in the conspiracy movement is the value of really seeking out good friends that you can just hang out with and actually talk about this kind of stuff with, because when you start out, you kind of start to lose all of those normal friends that you had because you're just not interested in them anymore, you know? It's kind of like if like what happened in the Netherlands when cannabis was made legal, 1 in 7 people used to smoke it, and then that dropped to 1 in 3. Oh, no, sorry. Then that got escalated to 1 in 21. A massive reduction by any standard. And when asked why did people stop smoking cannabis, a lot of them replied that their social circles changed. We didn't really have anything in common anymore. And there was no law requiring me to be with other people doing something illegal in private. So I just stopped hanging out with them. Right. And then the same thing happens when you start to learn about scumbaggery, I think, is that if your friends and or family or anything like that just ain't interested in exposing scumbaggery or even talking about it, you stop wanting to hang out with them. And as a result, sometimes you don't even have a crutch to lean on. Like I've talked to so many people who have found out that they've got now no friends, you know, like at all, and not even on the prospect of making any new ones, because the process of losing their friends in the first place, based upon not having any common ground to stand on, has made them believe that they don't have any common ground to stand on with anyone. I think it's the direct opposite. You've got common ground to stand with on absolutely everyone. It's just whether or not they choose to stand on their ground with you.
Right. Yeah. Fortunately, the people I work with, they've been friends with me. You know, I get razzed all the time for some of the stuff I like to talk about, and some of them are genuinely interested. But there's all a camaraderie there, and we're accepting of each other's beliefs, and I'm grateful that I have those type of people around me, because it really shows me that these people, they're actually my friends. They'll sit there and listen to me windbag out for an hour and a half about something they might not know as much about, you know, and then I'll have some of these people come in and show, have you seen this? Oh, yeah, dude, let me tell you about this, and go off into a discussion about that. And it's usually pretty wide-ranging topics, but it all seems to revolve around exposing scumbaggery. So,
well, scumbaggery revolves around everything to a large degree, so it's inevitable.
Right, but exposing it, you know, bringing it to the surface, going, hey, did you see this? You know, passing the information along, at least in our closed circle at the tattoo shop, is a good sign that there's an interest in at least doing the exposing, you know?
Yeah. Well, you ever seen those t-shirts that say, got milk?
Right.
Or is it like a t-shirt that got scumbaggery?
I knew you were going to say that one. How did I know that?
Well, because it was obvious.
Right.
And sure enough, we do have scumbaggery.
Yeah, unfortunately, we have more than we really need, I think.
Yeah.
If there's a need and a necessity for some, then maybe some should be allowed to remain, but not to the extent that it's gotten. think we need to kind of curtail that.
Yeah. And sometimes you do need to curtail your own scumbaggery and realize you're participating in the system in order to actually really work against it. And a lot of people, they try to go into the military or into the corporate world or something of that nature because they say, oh, well, I want to work it from within. It's like, no, actually, what happens is you're a good apple and you're jumping into a bad barrel, you frickwit.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm not disparaging anybody for having a slave job. Okay, you know, I used to work slave jobs. I know it's tough, and I know you just got to pay the bills. But it's not who you are. Okay.
Precisely.
And in fact, the longer you have a slave job, the more likely you are to forget who you are entirely.
Right. That is so true.
And then when you retire, you realize that you spent your entire life trying to do something else and you don't even know who you are anymore. And the only thing that there is around to keep you company isn't your workmates, it's your television, which really depresses you and makes you die earlier.
Right.
That's what I see whenever I consider for myself, you know, maybe I should just give up exposing scumbaggery and serving humanity and doing the right thing and having tens of thousands of listeners and really caring about people and assisting people into getting into the public eye when they probably should have their ideas expressed and what have you. Maybe I should just go get a slave job instead.
I couldn't see you doing that.
Yeah. No. Just can't be done. In fact, the last two times I tried, I had a panic attack, so it's just not going to happen. All right. Mark Sellett, ladies and gentlemen, check him out on Facebook, and thanks for sharing, you know, your time and your story with us, mate.
Well, thank you for having me on.
All right. And ladies and gentlemen, again, just a final reminder, this is a listener-supported broadcast. If you like the idea of getting all these little different voices out there, including some of the big names, you know, like George Norrie, Alan Watt, and G. Edward Griffin, and big, nice, awesome researchers who can speak real well and are well-versed, and they've had, you know, decades of experience and what have you. We get those people on too, you know. I'm not picky. then please go to the Vinnie Eastwood Show .com and subscribe or donate today. Like today would be really, really nice. Thank you very much. And we'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen. Have a very, very nice and happy day, wherever you may be and whatever you might be doing. Just expose a little bit of scumbaggery while you're doing it. You know, that's all I ask. Catch you later.
You are the only exception. You